From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Maybe you follow him on Twitter. More than a million people do. Or perhaps you look forward to spending your Saturday mornings with him. Of course, I'm talking about NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday host, Scott Simon. He is in the studio with me today. In addition to his radio gig, Simon is the author of a number of books, including the very touching Unforgettable, A Son, A Mother, and the Lessons of a Lifetime. He is in town to deliver the keynote address at the Hospice Thresholds Conference. Scott Simon, welcome to Maine and to Maine Calling.
Thank you, Jennifer. Good to be here.
We ordered up some sun for you. We haven't had much of that
this
spring.
I appreciate that. I'm told it doesn't always make an appearance, so I'm very honored to be here for that.
Oh, my goodness. I hope you brought it, and if you did, you can stay a few days.
Well, you know, it was raining as we drove in from Boston, and then I noticed the sun is out today. So I can't be responsible for bringing it, but I do notice there's a confluence of events.
As always, we want to hear from you, our listeners. What questions do you have for Scott? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Listen carefully. It's different than the pledge phone number. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Such a treat to have you sitting here before me, a long time listener, Scott Simon. And I guess what I really want to know is, as you put together Weekend Edition, do you have an overarching philosophy, something that you're keeping in the back of your mind when you're choosing your interviews, choosing which stories to cover?
Yeah. I mean, I think of what we do every week with exceptions, obviously, when there's an overwhelming news event, is kind of a news variety show. Mm. I think we can do that on the weekend. I mean, to a degree, all NPR news programs are that way because it includes the arts, but and every aspect of human life. But I like to think that we do the serious news. We do stories that break instantaneously, as you need to do nowadays. We also do a lot about the arts. We do a lot about literature. I think we're one of the few network shows that that interviews novelists because we think that the art of fiction is important. And we do films, and we do comedy, and we do classical music, and we do jazz, and we do hip-hop. We do everything. And I think it's important for us to keep that variety going week after week because I think that's what makes our lives fuller.
What stays with me often after listening to your program are your essays. And I'm wondering how you decide on the topic for your essays. It's interesting to me as a journalist because you are kind of willing to go there. You're willing to say something about topics. And I know a lot of journalists are careful about that. So how do you decide what topics to write your essay about and then how far to go as far as your personal beliefs?
Well, with the exception of talking about the Chicago Cubs, where I think my bias and partiality is. But even then, I will tell you, when they were in the World Series against the Cleveland Indians, I gave Cleveland every bit of benefit of the doubt, all right? And I do that. But I think I am careful about that. For example, last week I just talked about how utterly depressing and outrageous it is. By the way, we have another reminder today that there's even a phrase like another school shooting.
Yes.
And I shared the protocols that we've all developed, that we have in the news business, don't talk so much about the alleged or suspected shooter, talk more about the victims, the fact that local police departments. When I got the word of that, I happened to be sitting next to a college chancellor, Susan Cook of the University of Illinois at Springfield, and both of our phones began to go off at the same time. And she said, you know, that could be my campus. That's my first. And she explained to me how they go through those kinds of protocols. I have two daughters whose schools have live shooter drills. So I don't think it's much of a stretch to say that I'm outraged and dumbfounded by something like that. There have been other instances. I mean, years ago, I think I became, after having covered the war in Bosnia, it became, I think, obvious to a lot of people that I felt we had a moral responsibility where that genocide was. But for the most part, I am sort of careful. But I do think that there are emotional elements that you can touch when you talk about topics that are in the news that that bear some sharing, you know, and there too, I think it's important to have variety. Even though there has, God forbid, been another school shooting, and God forbid could be another by the time we're on the air on Saturday. I probably won't talk about that again.
Because you talked about it last week.
Yeah, and I try and mix it up. I don't want to have, sometimes you have to have two serious essays in a row, but if you have three, with rare exceptions, people begin to think of you as a common scold. I think you also have to be careful about doing more than two allegedly humorous essays in a row, or else people think that you're a clown. And as you know, I am in most important ways, but I try and also play a serious role every now and then. So I think that has to have variety too, and sometimes it has to be a story in the national news. I often welcome the chance to do an essay about something that's been overlooked or a life that's been lost that we haven't really accounted for, or something like that.
You say allegedly humorous. I was tickled and not surprised to learn that your father was a comic.
My father was a comedian. He made a living at it. But as I have explained for most of my life, my mother was really the comedian, because I think my father at home, and this is true because I have spent a lot of time talking to comics, and I spent a lot of time talking to the children of comics, people like Kelly Carlin, George Carlin's daughter. And I think we learned firsthand that at home, our fathers or mothers who were comics didn't give it away. They were often sad to the point of dour at home. That's why comedians are funny on stage. So my mother was really the funny one in the family. Great timing, great sense of humor. And the line that, I could share 100 different lines from her, that my father most admired was when years ago somebody asked my mother, "What's it like to be married to the funniest man in Chicago?" And my mother said, "I wouldn't know."
Oh, my. Well, this is a great segue because you wrote a book about your mother, but it was a collection of tweets. And Scott, I know
I wrote a book subsequently.
I'm sorry that I got those confused. Yeah. But what made you decide to tweet during such a personal and difficult time in your life when your mother was dying?
Because my mother was so funny and she was so interesting. Also, I should explain, my mother, forgive me, was an old showgirl. So she was not a shrinking violet. My mother, I don't think, understood Twitter so much, but she knew that, I am allegedly a public figure and knew that I would share this. She was not a shrinking violet. When I went to her bedside at the hospital in Chicago, I knew she was very sick. I didn't necessarily know that she was dying. At the advantage of hindsight, I should have put two and two together. But in any event, there were a few days of anxiety. She was just so funny and interesting and worth hearing. And, people who have Twitter profiles, I'm fortunate enough, we're fortunate enough, you and I in this business, to be able to talk, with the exception of today's show, to people of substance and people who are interesting. But as you know, the most interesting thing you might hear of a day and share on Twitter isn't necessarily from somebody that you interviewed.
Sure.
It's what you heard in line at Dunkin'. I won't say Starbucks.
I guess we did.
Okay, I know you have both, particularly in Portland. It's what you hear from your children, because I think, of course, my children are constantly entertaining and brilliant. And my mother was just so funny and so wise. At one point when it became apparent that this was going to be her last illness, she said, "I don't know why it's taking so long. I guess I'm just late for everything."
Oh, that is funny.
And when she we were trying to play, she was not sleeping. People, nurses would come in and say, "You need to sleep." And she, knowing she was dying at that point, would go, "No, I don't. Why would you want me to spend any time sleeping?" And so we began to listen to music. Wound up being Nat King Cole, Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Peggy Lee. In any event, my mother said at one point, "Why don't we listen to opera? I always slept when I went." And then the line that I thought was particularly worth sharing, she just looked at me in the middle of the night once and said, "Baby, you ought to spend more time talking to people in their 80s because they have looked just across the street at death for more than a decade. And they know what's really important in life." Mm. And I just thought, people need to hear that. I have to share that. So I didn't know I was going to write a book then, but I thought what my mother was saying was worth hearing.
You mentioned you have teenagers.
I do.
Do they allow
12 and 16.
Do they allow you to tweet about them? Do you have to seek permission?
I always ask permission. I find that that's wisest. Absolutely, I do. They're good-natured about it. They also know what I do for a living. And they sometimes, you know, give me advice, as a matter of fact, about what to tweet. And I don't know if you know this, Jennifer, but also our dog writes haiku. And I become
her. Wow, that is a talented dog.
Well, she's a French poodle, and it's true what they say. They're very intelligent. So, I mean, okay, look, it's haiku, which is the 575 form. It's not epic poetry, okay? But in any event, it's a haiku. So Daisy writes haiku, and I share them
prolific?
On my Twitter account. Oh, you can count on at least one a week sometimes and in other instances. I wish I could remember one of her better ones, but it's hard to capture the poetic form.
Well, talking about Twitter, I think my kids would call you a serial tweeter. Mm-hmm. And this is goes to that interesting balance that you have where you can tweet about current events mm-hmm. and make them funny without coming very close to the line and not crossing it. Just a few minutes ago, you tweeted.
Oh, this is the tax one. Yes, all right.
I don't know who Mr. Trump's tax advisor was in those days, but I hope he is nowhere near the federal budget now.
Yeah. I guess I did say that, didn't I, come to think of it? I think that's a fair tweet to put out for all the obvious reasons. And I think even people who support Donald Trump, President Trump, that they have a different point of view. They say somebody who figures out how to avoid paying taxes and, in a sense, invest so much without it being his own money is a financial genius.
Do you ever start and then stop and
yes,
say no?
Absolutely, I do. Yeah.
How often?
Not very often, because I think you learn how to think those things through.
Okay.
And a couple of times I've gone over the line and I've said something that, you know, needs to be apologized for.
All right. Well, what does it say about our culture today that Twitter is what it is?
Boy, I've tried to figure that out. I think on the one hand, you know, it's fine. It's even great. This is the way we share with each other at this snapshot in time. And I think that's fine. It's a good way to survey a lot of opinion. On the other hand, I am really concerned that because of the algorithms involved, we are not surveying a lot of opinion that stretches across a variety. It is too easy to bury ourselves into silos of opinion.
Yep.
And I really worry about that because I think we can see that effect absolutely everywhere. And the fact that people have, in many ways, lost the art of talking to each other. And, you know, and this kind of sometimes just reflexive indignation you see on Twitter and Facebook really upsets me.
We had an expert on the show say they think what's different about politics today is this is now the politics of grievance. Your use of the word indignation reminded me just now of that.
I wouldn't care to dispute that. I think there's a lot of that, yes.
Well, Scott, I'm going to start with a really fun listener Facebook post, which I think you're really going to enjoy. This came in this morning from a woman named Martha White.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read the comment, you'll understand who she is. At the book launch for E.B. White on democracy last night in Belfast, a listener asked me who today I thought might be writing essays with a similar style and grace as my grandfather.
Oh, my God.
On reflection.
E.B. White is a great hero of mine.
On reflection, I think Scott Simon might be a strong contender for his level-headed approach to even the most serious topics and his welcome wit and obvious sense of humor throughout. So thank you, Scott Simon. Yep.
Oh, my God.
E.B. and Catherine White's granddaughter. So,
Oh my God, that's
wonderful. You'd enjoy that.
I'm very honored by it. I mean, I keep a copy of his essays near my right off of my desk at home. I gave our staff members, I guess, a couple of holidays ago, all of them his wonderful book, and it was reissued by New York Review of Books. This is New York. There's no writer I admire more. That's amazing to hear.
How long have you been writing essays?
A long time, I guess, at this point. Well, you
did
know.
Did you start as a kid? Were you the kid with a journal?
I wasn't the kid with a journal, but I was always the kid that ran, like, the, you know, the newspaper, and even in fourth grade. And where I
even in fourth grade?
No,
oh my
I
wrote. What kind of headline was in your fourth grade newspaper?
Oh, gosh. Ricky gets a double or something like that. I can't remember.
It wasn't investigative journalism about the lunch meat.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. I was editor of the Totem Pole at Camp Indianola, which is our camp newspaper.
Okay.
And I will simply say it was called the Totem Pole, and we had any number of more profane permutations of that name, as you can imagine. So I was the editor of the Totem Pole, and we once, I have to be careful telling this story, we did a so-called investigative story about how many bugs there were in the bathrooms. And this was a summer camp in Madison, Wisconsin, and a bunch of city kids, usually, you know, from Chicago, Milwaukee, maybe as far away as St. Louis, would come to what we thought of as the wilds of Wisconsin. And, you know, the outdoor life was just something that was a little bit strange to us. So we saw all these bugs in the bathroom. And as you can imagine, the camp, because we had, I think we had to write two or three letters home a week. And it was easiest just for a lot of kids to take the copy of our newspaper, the Totem Pole, and write, "Love you, Mom," and just stuff it into the envelope and send it on. And so parents were getting copies of the Totem Pole, which, you know, I was talking about on the so-called front page about all the bugs in the bathroom. And the camp director, Hack Waldenberg, was utterly livid. And he came over to me. It was morning breakfast time. And in any event, he said, "Of course there are bugs in the bathroom. It's a bathroom. What do you think? Where do you think? If you were a bug, where else would you go?" And he kind of thumped the rest of the papers right down in front of me, and as he stalked off, he shouted, "City kids! Damn city kids!" So, yes, that was my first investigative journalism.
And from that point forward, you were drunk with power and had to write another article with as much power, right?
Yes, my mother thought that was my future was cast right then and there.
And I bet your mom was proud, from what I hear about your mom.
My mother was very proud indeed, as a matter of fact. Yeah, but I used to write essays for the Totem Pole. I used to write essays all the time.
Well, we are speaking with, I don't even need to say, because I'm sure you all recognize his voice, NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday host, Scott Simon. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us 1-800-399-3566, send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're going to take a quick break from this fun conversation to hear from the folks in the next room, where volunteers are standing by to take your pledge.
And the folks in the next room are going to give you a slightly different number to call to make a pledge to Maine Public Radio, 1-800-866-1475. That's 1-800-866-1475. And online at mainepublic.org. I'm Jennifer Mitchell, one of the voices you hear on Maine Public Radio, here with Mark Simpson, who heads the news department. That's
Thank you. Big
department.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to run the news department and news operation here at Maine Public. I just have to say, those guys in the other room, Scott and Jen, they're having a lot of fun.
I know.
They're having a lot of fun.
You know, it's interesting. I was listening to Scott's story there about, fourth grade kid journalism and stuff like that. I kind of did something a little similar in fourth grade. I thought that the water tower, I heard a rumor that there's no top on it. So I wrote this hard-hitting sort of piece that I thought was hard. But how
did you
there's
go
no
up there?
No, I was a little kid. Come on,
I
thought, well, what about birds? And I said, I've seen pigeons roosting facing out, and I was just asking these questions. And I think a lot of us might have like a school paper story like that. Do you remember?
I used to write for the school paper. Yeah? I thought I was writing very high-minded. Kind of Jack Kerouac-esque meldings of jazz and current events.
I can totally see this right there.
I have no idea what the readership thought of it, though.
but here we are.
Here we are.
Bringing you the news each and every day here on Maine Public Radio. 1-800-866-1475. So it turned out okay, right?
It turned out okay. We ended up in a good place.
We did. MainePublic.org is the place also where you can go to make your pledge online. There's a big red donate button that you can just punch, and it's right there. 1-800-866-1475. Everything you hear on Maine Public Radio has dollars from donors behind it.
That's right. 1-800-866-1475. That's the number to call. Of course, give online, MainePublic.org. I want to give a shout out to Portland Pie. Thank you so much for keeping our volunteers fed well and satisfied as we are making our way through the drive. But we want to say, call now if you can, 1-800-866-1475. We are supported by the public for the public, and we ask you now to give as generously as you can. Reach into your treasure, your coffers, find out what's the right amount for you to give. Maybe you can give at the $5 a month level. Maybe it's $10 a month. Maybe you can give $1 a day, $365 for this service that is here for you every day, all year, 24/7.
Right. And one of the things I really love about public radio is that it's sort of a, it reminds me all the time that generosity is not the preserve of the very elite or wealthy. We often have a tendency to say, if I win the lottery, I'm going to give this and I'm going to do that. It doesn't take the lottery. It just takes whatever
a little amount,
a little bit,
absolutely. Many times.
And we know that a lot of folks out there do find value here, and they love this service. And right there, that's a new member, that doorbell. So welcome, come on in. Glad to have you. So there's so much here to love on Maine Public Radio. We think that you probably agree if you're listening right now, if you look forward to Maine Calling, maybe you really are enjoying having Scott Simon's voice in a different day part.
I want to hear where the conversation's going next.
Yes, I know, me too. 1-800-866-1475, mainpublic.org. Won't you call in your support? Because that's how public broadcasting works.
That's right. And, of course, your dollars go towards making programs like Maine Calling possible. We've got a whole team of producers back there working every day to bring you these great shows and also to give a forum, a public platform that you, our Maine listeners, can call in, ask questions, public officials, celebrities of note, I have to say, even in our own public media universe here, and talk about important issues of the day. That's what Maine Calling brings you, and that's what Maine Public delivers to you, and your dollars go to support by calling 1-800-866-1475. We're giving generously online, mainpublic.org. Look, we're going back to the show in just a little bit, yep. But you can still give while the program's on, mainpublic.org, simple, safe, secure, and fast.
And fortunately, we are now on a counting down side. That's the side you want to be on when you've got a large goal like this. And it may seem like a large goal, $260,000. We are absolutely, we know that we want to finish this drive as quickly as we can. $260,000, and then it will be over. 1-800-866-1475, mainpublic.org. So many reasons to make that call. And if you've never done that, brand new member, we're always looking for more of those.
This is your chance. Maybe you've been listening a long time and you realize how important Maine Public is in your life, but you just haven't taken that next step. Well,
right.
Now's a great time to do that, and it's really easy. The number, 1-800-866-1475, and we've got volunteers standing by who want to take your call. You can also go on over to mainpublic.org. It's simple, secure. We got a red button right there on the website for you donate, and we hope you can give very generously.
That's right. As a monthly donor, $10 a month, $25 a month, $100 a month if your budget stretches to that. The important thing is to recognize the value that Maine Public Radio brings to your life each and every day and what you bring to Maine Public Radio. Support is at the heart of every single program here on Maine Public Radio. So again, that number is 1-800-866-1475, mainpublic.org, 800-866-1475.
We're back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, NPR Weekend Edition host Scott Simon joins us in the studio. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll go to Eddie, who's calling from Belfast. Hi, Eddie. You're on the line with Scott Simon.
Thanks for coming on the show today. Just know that I speak for a lot of Mainers when I say we love your show on Saturday mornings.
Thank you.
And Jennifer, you're doing a great job too. So you can take a bow as well.
Thank you.
The question I have for Scott is, Scott, if you hadn't pursued a career in radio, what other career would you have pursued? And part B is, did you ever consider leaving radio to pursue another vocation?
Adult films. It's a joke. I think I just would have done more conventional writing. Probably what I would. But, I don't know. You can never tell. It never occurred to me to do anything that didn't involve writing. Let's put it that way. I can't do anything else. I have no practical skills, as my family will tell you. I have no practical skills whatsoever. I don't have a driver's license. And my wife has agreed that if at this point I made any serious effort to try and acquire a driver's license. She would prevent me from doing it because she doesn't think I'd be very good at it and, you know, would be a danger to everybody. I have no particular practical skills, so I was kind of left with this.
By that answer.
Pardon me?
I'm not surprised by your answer.
Thank you. Well, I mean, you know, I went through the period, obviously, where I wanted to be a baseball player as a, you know, as a little kid, and but that, that never went very far.
Well, we're lucky you pursued writing and radio.
Thank you.
Eddie, thanks so much for your call. We have an email from Marilyn. I'd like to take a leaf from Krista Tippett's book and ask Scott Simon to describe the religious or spiritual content of his childhood and upbringing. This is something you've written about.
I have written about it. I'm from a multi-faith household. My father's side of the family was Jewish. My mother's side, Catholic. And I grew up in a very multi-faith environment. It's one that our family still lives in, for that matter. And I don't mind saying, I'll be a little careful about this, you know, there are a lot of people in journalism that I understand. Religious life is not a part of what they do. And doesn't have to be, and I respect everybody's convictions. My wife and I, though, both feel that spiritual values, religion, are you know important thing that we are. Our children are obviously free to make any choices that they want to make, even now that they're 12 and 16. Though they both happen to be in parochial schools, we encourage them to be good students and to abide by that. But I was very proud. Well, I'm very proud of both of them. They both have active spiritual lives. It means something to them, and I think that's great.
We'll go to Daryl, who's calling in from Hospice of Southern Maine. Hi, Daryl. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer and Scott. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, this is Daryl Cady, CEO of Hospice of Southern Maine. Scott, I read your book, and we're so excited to have you as our keynote speaker for our annual Thresholds Conference tomorrow.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to be there.
You're welcome.
I'm going to talk, obviously, about a lot of the themes that are in the book, because there's probably no group of people, journalists included, that I have, almost journalists especially, I have no more respect for than people who work in end-of-life care. I know that the experience with my mother certainly imprinted that on me, experience that my mother-in-law unfortunately died a couple years thereafter. And the people who help us through those moments are blessed in front of us. And I know one thing that occurred to me when everyone was so nice to our family during what turned out to be my mother's final illness. You know, that was a lifetime experience for my wife and I and our family, a lifetime experience that, you only get a few of those in your life. Happened again a couple of years later when my mother-in-law died. But the wonderful people who saw us through that period in the hospital and then later with my mother-in-law, they will do that, 50 times a year. Mm-hmm. And to maintain their grace, maintain their sensitivity, maintain their sense of humor, maintain their perspective, maintain their important healing geniality and kindness is, I'm to use an overworked word in our times, I'm simply awed by them.
Daryl.
Yes.
Thank you for calling in.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you. And Scott, we're thrilled that we'll be able to host you tomorrow. And unfortunately for listeners who have not registered, the conference is sold out, but we are holding three free community forums on the same topic in Portland, Kennebunk, and Scarborough over the summer and fall. And people can register for these and also learn more about hospice at our website at hospiceofsouthernmaine.org. So again, we're thrilled to host you tomorrow for our sold-out conference. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Daryl. We'll go to an email. This is from Debbie. Yeah. BJ Lederman, I love the witty credits you give him, but wonder, is he your brother? Best friend? Did you lose a bet?
Well, almost. It is in BJ's contract that he be credited once a week, and that falls on our show. And I am pleased to do it, but you may have noticed that we have credits nowhere else in the program because it was the impression we got from listeners. You know, because the first hour of our show, I assume we come on, I should know, at 8 a.m.
Yes.
The first hour of our show is sometimes the second hour in the Midwest and Rocky Mountain and vice versa. So our programmers were concerned that when we came across with the credits, people would think the show was necessarily ending, because in many time zones it would not be. So we ceased to do credits, but BJ had a very good contract and a very good lawyer, so he has to be credited each and every week. I forget what inspired me to do this, but I started to sneak them in various places, and BJ loves it. So, yes, he certainly is a friend of mine, but I wouldn't. That's not why we do it.
You know, Scott, during the first part of this program, we were talking about essays, and you have a story to tell.
Oh, yeah. All right, here I would tell you, writing essays. A couple of years ago, our oldest daughter, who's now 16, was writing an essay, as they often have to do in class. And her teacher told her she shouldn't repeat words at all. And so in her essay, it was, he said this, then she exclaimed that, then she ejaculated this. I mean, she was using, you know, all kinds of euphemism there. And I said, you know, baby, said is a perfectly good neutral word. The great E.B. White said that you can repeat said because it is a neutral word. Otherwise, you will call indecorous attention to all the wrong words, because it'll become like a drinking game. People will guess what, you know, what synonym you're going to use for said next. And that's what the great E.B. White said. And my wife leaned over and said, darling, I would do what your teacher tells you to do. Don't pay attention to Baba. And I think she was absolutely right.
I've said similar things to my kids, though not as not so articulately, but I have always said...
Oh, yeah, it's terrible, because you hear the teacher says something else, you want to go, oh,
yes,
really?
Yes, I've said there's nothing wrong with is. Is, there's nothing wrong with is, just as though there's nothing wrong with said. I love that.
Strunk and White is
the
greatest book about writing ever.
Email from John. Awesome to have you on the show. As a young journalist trying to make ends meet, do you have any tips on how to balance this demanding and, unfortunately, in my case, low-paying career work? I'd hate to leave the field, but I've seen many young journalists leave the field to pursue other work.
Yeah, and that's absolutely a problem right now. I think maybe some more venues are opening. I don't know how long they'll last. I certainly don't think that high pay is up there. I think this has a winnowing effect. Now I'm depressed by all the news organizations that are closing. I think that's not that's bad for our democracy. I don't want to get pompous about it, but it's bad news for the whole idea that an informed public is a kind of public that can make intelligent and rational decisions about our future democratically. That being noted, there is a winnowing effect. I think the people who really want to stay into it, stay in the profession, will figure out a way to do that. But undoubtedly, we're losing a great many good and gifted people because they just can't figure out a way to make ends meet. And I regret that.
We have a tweet from Perry.
Mm-hmm.
You may understand this tweet. I don't. Someone get that man a proper lobster roll.
I don't. Have I made lobster roll jokes? I'm not certain.
I don't know. Maybe he just is so excited,
Perry,
you're in Maine, that you need to have a proper lobster roll.
The first thing members of our staff said to me this morning when I called in was, have you had your first lobster roll yet? So everybody, and no, I haven't, as a matter. I didn't know you could have a lobster roll for breakfast. I had yogurt and fruit. That's not the same thing at all, right?
No, yeah. But, you know, I agree. It's probably a good idea, unless there's some reason you don't eat lobster a lobster roll while you're here.
And is it lobster roll?
He wrote lobster.
Okay.
But
lobster.
You may say lobster.
Okay, all right.
An email from Carol. Unbeknownst to any of our family, when my mother was taking her last breath at Gosnell House, she whispered to me, remember me on the full moon. I was shocked to know her love of full moons at such a late date.
Oh, my word.
It's lovely.
Well, I do think something happens when people are in that... in that space, where they begin to look more towards the future than they look at the past, or their perspective is such that they're already part of whatever is ahead, and therefore that sounds to me like something maybe somebody said in that spirit.
Our phone number, we're speaking with Scott Simon, 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. taking a quick break from this conversation for another very important conversation going on today. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. Well, I'm Jennifer Mitchell, one of the voices you hear on Maine Public Radio, here again with Mark Simpson, who heads the news department here. And we're going to give you a different set of numbers from the Maine calling numbers. That's 1-800-866-1475. If you dial that, you can make your gift to Maine Public Radio. Donations that will go to everything you hear on Maine Public Radio. And every time you turn on the radio, you will know that you are supporting this service.
Well, I hope the audience is enjoying this interview with Scott Simon as much as I am.
Yeah.
I love, boy, they're throwing such interesting questions, and I love it. It's so local here. Lobster rolls, Scott Simon.
You've got to have a good one, or you'll be prejudiced for life.
If you need recommendations, Scott, I'm sure the staff can oblige. 1-800-866-1475 or mainpublic.org. We're having a blast here during our spring drive. I was so engrossed in listening to the conversation with Jen Rooks and Scott that they had to get me and say, hey, you're coming on. But we're here to ask you right now to support wonderful conversations like that. You hear them on the great platform that we have in Maine Calling, but also the wonderful service that we provide to you in the form of our wonderful journalists and staff that cover the entire state of Maine. Jen Rooks usually up further north and east a bit in Bangor. And we've got reporters that are in Lewiston and Augusta covering the State House. We've got some down here in Portland. And we send them out also where we don't have stations.
All over the place.
And we're investigating a different series, wanting to hear you, the public, tell us what issues are important in your community. We're doing a Tell Me More tour, which is an event that's happening Thursday night. 1-800-866-1475, mainpublic.org. I wanted to get that out there, but also to say Jen Mitchell, is going to be there Thursday evening in Bangor.
That's right, along with Susan Sharon.
Along with Susan Sharon, talking about the journalism that we do.
Rural reporting, because obviously when you live kind of in the Bangor area, and also just because I've done so many farm stories and things like that, we do a lot of rural reporting, because obviously Maine is a very rural state, and so there's this whole other part of Maine that does not exist in urban form, and that's kind of what we try to focus on. Bagel Central.
Bagel Central.
33 Central Street in Bangor, downtown Bangor, and that is tomorrow, and we hope that we'll see you there at 5:30. So we look forward to hearing from you.
That's right. 1-800-866-1475, mainpublic.org. We're here not only to talk about those great things we're doing, but in support, ask your support right now to give as generously as you can to the service that we provide. Wonderful conversations that we're able to have. Great journalists. It goes towards the transmitters. It goes towards paying for the programs you enjoy. And really, we are supported by you, our listeners, who enjoy the service that we provide. 800-866-1475. And mainpublic.org.
You know, every call that you make, every donation that you give, it's an investment in the future of public broadcasting. You know, I've just started raking around in my garden up north, and there's like, it's just cold still, and no leaves or anything like that. But I know that if I just tend my little peony shoots that are just coming up, that they will grow and be beautiful later on this summer. And that's true of anything that you care about. I think, a proper amount of, love and attention and care will make anything flourish. And public radio is just like that. You know, your donations are what allow us to grow and to flourish into the future. You're such an important part of that.
It's a nurturing of the mind.
Indeed.
Is what I like to think of it as. And, you know, we were just talking about this. I think so many of us listen because we're curious about the world. We're curious about the state of things, both in our backyards, across the state, the region, the nation, beyond, internationally, even, out there in space.
Those are some well-traveled dollars when you give here. They do. They go to space. They go across the planet. They go just into your backyard.
Yeah. Literally.
You're right.
1-800-866-1475. Also, mainpublic.org. Listen, you're the reason that we're able to hear folks like Scott Simon on the weekends, today's Maine Calling. But really, it's because you value us as a trusted source for news and information here. When there is so much noise out there trying to get through to the signal, what is the story at the heart of it? That's what we're here to tell you about. 1-800-866-1475.
And it's so especially important if you've never actually picked up the phone and made that call. If you've thought about it and thought, well, well, one of these days I'm going to do it, or I really should do this. We know how that is. Don't worry about that. Just rectify it today. Let today be.
Out on the air. 1-800-866-1475. That's the number to call. We're getting ready to go back to the program right now. Yep. More Scott Simon coming your way, but you can still give at 800-866-1475, mainpublic.org. That's the number to call. And thank you so much for
thank
your support.
You.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Weekend Edition, Saturday host Scott Simon is our special guest. He's in Maine and in the studio with me. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We were talking about Twitter before, Scott. We have a tweet from Marty. Ask him if he's met Theo Epstein from the Cubs, and can we have him back?
Yes and no. Did that take care of it?
No, I don't think that was an acceptable answer.
Oh, yes and no. I mean, sorry, I have. It's been my pleasure to meet Theo, and no, I think he's doing a great job for the Cubs. I think people often say, "What does he do after he has won the World Series with the Red Sox and won the World Series with the Cubs?" I don't think there's any other job in Major League Baseball for him when you've won the World Series with both of those clubs. I wouldn't rule out that he'd enter politics.
Spoken first here.
Yeah.
We have an email from Jack. I as well don't drive by choice, and the world is a safer place because of it.
God bless, and he lives in Maine where that can't be easy.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
We have Joy in Camden calling in. Hi, Joy, go ahead.
Hi. Hi. Scott, several years ago, I read an essay, I believe, that you wrote. It was about the death of a young 24-year-old woman, I believe, a relative of yours, perhaps. And I think it was so beautifully written that I went online and I got a copy of it, and now I don't have it anymore. And I'm the volunteer coordinator for a home care and hospice here in Camden, and I would love to have a copy. Do you remember that essay?
I do. I think you're talking about my wife's niece, Camille, or as we would pronounce the name in America, Camille, C-A-M-I-L-L-E, who, I'm almost certain that's what you're thinking of.
Yes, it was very beautifully written. I heard it on the radio first when you read it, and I was very moved by it. I thought it was just very beautifully written, and thank you for that.
Well, thank you. She was a remarkable young woman.
Joy, thank you for your call. Amy on Facebook writes, I have referred to Scott Simon as my auditory crush for many years, and I rarely miss our Saturday morning date. So how do your wife and daughters respond to these kind of comments, Scott?
Well, my daughters have only recently do they have any idea of what I do for a living. It's not a big priority for them. They don't, with rare exceptions. I love it when our daughters bring their friends into the show. They like doing that, and I think that's great fun. I sometimes think they only come in because we have bagels there. But I think that's great fun. Their heads aren't turned at all. My wife has a sense of humor about it. I have to be careful to this. So a few years ago, we were at a book signing. I was signing books in Minneapolis. And my wife had just heard one time too many. Somebody said, you know, you don't look like your voice at all. And my wife said, excuse me. I do not understand why people say this. This is my husband. That is his voice. That is his voice. This is my husband. I think what you mean to say is my husband does not look like whatever fantasy you have entertained of him all these years. Well, my husband cannot be responsible for that. And the author schlepper, as we called them, who was, you know, trucking me around Minneapolis, just stepped in and said, okay, Mrs. Simon, help us with these books out here, if you could, please. So every now and then she gets a little overworked by it.
We'll go to Chris calling from Mapleton. And so, you know, Scott, Mapleton is far northern Maine. Mm-hmm. Hi, Chris. Do you still have snow on the ground?
In places, yes, we do.
Oh, my.
Reindeer?
Not yet.
Oh, my gosh. You have reindeer at some point during the year?
No, I'm just...
Oh, all right. Sorry. Okay. I got all excited. You could tell me anything and I'd believe it.
Moose.
Moose. Okay. Yeah.
Earlier, you were mentioning how we're losing a lot of talented people from the media.
Yeah.
My wife and I gave up regular TV. We only watch live stream on the internet now, and the big reason we made that choice is no matter where we went, we found we were getting somebody's opinion of the news as opposed to the news.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the media has kind of done that to themselves over time.
Well, I think there's been a lot of that because of, you know, obviously some opinion-based services, opinion-based programs, opinion-based segments increase ratings. I think there's a lot to what you say.
Alrighty.
That's why it's important for us to have a variety of opinions, so you just don't hear one. But yeah, it's the easiest thing to just get a bunch of people blabbering as opposed to do actual hard reporting, and we try to avoid that.
And it's less expensive.
It's less expensive, yes, yeah. Exactly.
Chris, thank you for your call. We're going to go to Heather, who's calling from Stonington. Hi, Heather. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to give a shout-out to Maine Public Radio. I'm a Boston standing member. I've heard Scott Simon many times, and I heard the piece last week that we aren't discussing today, and I just wanted to say you told it with grace and dignity. And for Maine Public Radio, whenever I'm visiting family, I turn it on, and I heard a lovely topic today about a very dirty topic, juniper waste treatment. And who knew? Now I know about the bills that are before Maine legislature, and I love it. Keep doing what you're doing, NPR, Public Radio, Maine and Massachusetts.
Thank you, Heather, for your call. Scott, you came to public radio more than 30 years ago, correct?
Yes.
How has it changed?
A lot more people listening. We used to joke at WBEZ in Chicago, if somebody called up and said, what time does All Things Considered come on? We'd say, well, what time would you like to hear it? it's a major media player now. The audience that we have of tens of millions of people across the country has made a significant difference. I always thought we would get there, to tell you the truth. I'm not surprised by that at all. I think we provide something that, alas, becomes more and more urgent as our times progress. And that's information so that people can make their own judgments. It's deep and it's solid and it's well done. It also has flair. It respects the narrative art. It tries to sweep people along in stories. It takes a look at stories. And one of the things that I point out, as a couple of callers have mentioned this, that I think is important for any real news organization to do, and it's something that we certainly do at NPR and I think at Maine Public, every now and then you're going to do something that upsets the audience. There's no such thing as a safe space where the news is concerned. We're going to do stories that will sometimes upset people who are listening, and there's a reason for that. That's what journalists do sometimes. You just don't pat an audience on the head and say, you know, you're right. Everything you think about everything is right, and we're going to give you the means just to continue to think that you're right. Every now and then, you have to do a story in a way that introduces people to a new set of facts, something that they didn't know before, that runs the risk of them saying, I don't like to hear that at all. But that's what makes it real journalism.
Ladies and gentlemen, Scott Simon. Scott Simon, thank you so much for joining us today. He's the host of Weekend Edition Saturday, but you already knew that. He is a best-selling author, lifelong Cubs fan, and in town to deliver the keynote address at the Hospice Thresholds Conference. George Thomas ran the board today. We had additional help from John Keimel, and Isaac Merson answered your calls. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio. And before I sign off,
I understand we're going to hand things off to my usual Saturday Weekend Edition co-host here in Maine, Jennifer Mitchell. I have just met her here today. She has a much better voice than I do. I mean, my gosh, this is intimidating. In any event, so Jennifer, you're going to talk to them now, right? And I sound like Mickey Mouse compared to you.
Oh.
Oh, my goodness. No, Scott Simon's such a comforting, welcoming, and warm presence. I think probably my favorite interviewer of all time on public radio was Scott Simon. So just a real pleasure and a treat to have him here in our very midst. He did not phone this in. He's right here talking to all the folks who love Weekend Edition Saturday and Weekend Edition Sunday and All Things Considered and Morning Edition and all that you hear on Maine Public Radio. And it's all here for you and actually by you as listeners.